Welcome to ACT Radio, Animal Concerns of Texas. I'm Greg Lawson.
And I'm Tom Linney.
Here on ACT, we talk about how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
We also talk about why a vegetarian or vegan diet is the best thing one can do for the environment, as well as one's own personal health.
So if you're concerned about the environment, if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, if you're concerned about your health, stay with us for Animal Concerns of Texas. Coming up on today's show, we feature a conversation with Dr. Ivan Sandoval Cervantes, a cultural anthropologist from Ciudad Juarez and a visiting assistant professor of anthropology at the University of Texas at El Paso. That's a little later in the show, but first some news. The ice cream giant Ben & Jerry's has added two new vegan flavors to their repertoire: peanut butter half-bake, which is peanut butter cookie dough, chocolate fudge brownie bites, and vanilla and chocolate ice cream, and cinnamon bun, which is cinnamon ice cream with cinnamon bun dough with a cinnamon streusel swirl. Yep, all vegan. The two new additions will join Ben & Jerry's other non-dairy flavors that include caramel almond brittle, cherry Garcia, chocolate fudge brownie, chunky monkey, coconut seven-layer bar, caramel toffee fudge, and PB and cookies. 9 dairy-free pints are now available, with Haagen-Dazs offering 4 delicious vegan flavors, Breyers is already in on the vegan ice cream game, and Halo Top Creamery's launching vegan ice cream flavors last year. It's no surprise Ben & Jerry's is adding to their non-dairy offerings. What's more, consumer demand for milk alternatives is on the rise. People are becoming more concerned about their own health and are also coming to realize the impact that their food choices have on the planet and animals. As a result, they are actively looking for alternatives that can not only replace the traditional animal products they grew up with, but also surpass them in taste and quality as well. With the entire market for dairy-free milk projected to reach $1.7 billion by this year, it seems like a no-brainer that Ben & Jerry's will continue to expand their non-dairy offerings.
Two white tigers housed illegally have been seized and placed in the care of a North Texas exotic animal sanctuary. Officials at the NSYNC Exotics Wildlife Rescue and Education Center in Wiley, Texas, say that state wildlife officials contacted the sanctuary about 30 miles northeast of Dallas after finding the tigers at an undisclosed location. Two bears also seized have been moved to a zoo in Gainesville. The sanctuary's founder and president, Vicky Cahey, says the tigers are joining 77 other cats at the shelter, and they're believed to be about 6 years old, and they have health issues, including bad eye problems. Cahey says the housing of tigers without proper permits is a serious problem in Texas, where she says there are more tigers than there are in the wild. According to the best estimates, there are way over 2,000 tigers living in the Lone Star State, but only 50 permits for tigers are filed with the State Department of Health Services. And the majority of those tigers are kept as backyard pets. Most of them are kept in deplorable conditions. Since 1990, over 30 Texans have been killed by tigers, and over 250 people have been mauled. In the last few legislative sessions, some Texas lawmakers have sought to tighten regulations on exotic animal ownership. One bill in 2013 would have banned individuals from owning or selling dangerous animals in counties with populations greater than 75,000 people. Another bill in 2015 would have required dangerous animals to be registered with the state. Neither of those bills made it out of committee. In most areas of Texas, if you want to own a tiger, there's nothing to stop you. The state has no regulations when it comes to exotic animals, and federal laws do not apply because most of the Texas tigers are considered private pets. In fact, it's easier in Texas to buy a tiger than it is to adopt a kitten from a shelter.
In a huge win for animals, Norway banned fur farms. The law will take effect by 2025 and save the lives of about 700,000 minks and 110,000 foxes every year. Norway has approximately 300 fur farms that bring in around $63 million annually. The Scandinavian country contributes to about 3% of the 7.3 million foxes and 1% of the 72.6 million minks farmed for their fur in the world each year, with China being the major leading contributor for both fox and mink fur. The ban is not expected to have a major impact on Norway's economy, but will have a major positive impact on animals in the country. Animals on fur farms live in pure misery in barren cages where many are bred to become abnormally massive, and they all meet the dreadful fate of a painful death, typically by electrocution. Fur has become increasingly out of fashion across the globe, and there have been major shifts towards a fur-free world recently with fashion powerhouses like Gucci, Armani, Michael Kors, Jimmy Choo, and BCBG joining a number of leading designers like Calvin Klein, Ralph Lauren, Tommy Hilfiger, Hugo Boss, and the all-vegan Stella McCartney in banning the use of fur. We hope Norway stands as an example to other countries and influences them to end the cruel industry as well. Stay with us. Coming up next is a conversation with Dr. Ivan Sandoval Cervantes, a cultural anthropologist from Ciudad Juarez and visiting assistant professor of anthropology at the University of Texas at El Paso. Amongst other studies, he is developing a new project that examines the emergent animal rights movement in urban Mexico in the midst of continuing violence and ongoing challenges to the Mexican legal system. That's next on Animal Concerns of Texas. Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas is Ivan Sandoval Cervantes. Thanks for being with us, Ivan.
Thank you for having me.
Ivan, we'd like to start by asking you how you got involved in the study of human-animal interactions.
That's a question that makes me also think about my discipline, which is anthropology. I've always been interested in animals and the way they are treated in different cultures. But while I was a grad student at the University of Oregon, there was this movement into anthropology to go beyond the human and to try to incorporate non-human animals, not only as symbols or as resources, but rather think about them as active parts in human culture, and maybe even as agents. So while I was doing my PhD, I started thinking about this, and I got interested in what's called multi-species ethnography, but I was already halfway through my dissertation, so it was a little bit difficult to change that topic, so I waited until I got here to El Paso, Juarez region.
You know, it seems like throughout history, man has always considered himself to be at the top of the food chain, the hierarchy, and animals were way down the list of importance. But it also seems like things have turned around in the last few years, and people have more compassion towards animals than they used to. Do you think that's a valid idea?
Yes, I would agree with that, and also I think that at least when it comes to anthropological literature, animals have always been there, but the ways in which, and they've always been important, but always as symbols, and always in relation to how humans have used them, but to go beyond that, that was really difficult for anthropology, precisely because the idea of anthropology is the study of humans, and bringing non-human animals into this discipline was controversial to a lot of people who were very much focused on fixing the human problem first and then moving to other less important things, which I think supports what you were saying.
Right, and sort of on the other side of that is that when you think about human issues, and if people want, you know, the focus to be about, for instance, human rights, it actually does benefit us all to look at animal issues. So if you're thinking about, finally, people are coming to the realization about how important it is to have this balance in wildlife and balance in the environment, and not being able to, you know, you kill off one form of predator and it has all sorts of ramifications for the rest of the world. It has ramifications for, you know, if you look at the oceans and how what's happening to shark finning, and it's a top-down issue, and it actually affects, for the people that say they only care about human issues, that actually affects the humans who are involved in fishing industries, or, you know, and also from a health perspective, if you talk about like veganism and how you know, people changing their diet actually makes is better for humans. And so there's if for the people that are just focused on how you know, human issues are more important, you really actually need to look at animal issues too.
We're all interconnected, and you know, our use of poisons on our food crops is leading to the disappearance of pollinators, wild bees, and that'll have significant ramifications for humans.
Right, right.
And even the way we use language sometimes to describe animals, but also to describe other groups of humans, to sort of describe them in a certain way to justify certain actions against them, there's a lot of parallelism in the way in which throughout history people have used certain language to describe animals, but also humans. And by starting when we start to think about animal rights and the way we use language, for example, that also has consequences to the ways in which other human groups are described as less human or somehow without culture in so justifying a specific forms of treatment.
Yeah, right. As an insult, calling somebody an animal or chicken or a pig.
Right, or a rat. That's true. There's a lot of that. So you grew up for part of your life in Juarez. Tell us a little bit about your path to here and how you made it back to El Paso.
So I'm originally from Ciudad Juarez, and I lived there until I was about 14 years old, and then I lived in Puebla in central Mexico. And then I moved to the United States to do my PhD in anthropology. I went to the University of Oregon at Eugene, Oregon, where there's a big vegan community where I became vegan when I was in Oregon, but coming back here, I switched to vegetarianism, but vegan is always the goal. So I came here about a year and a half ago, and after I finished my PhD in anthropology, and right now I'm at the sociology and anthropology department here at UTEP.
Right. And so amongst other projects, you're examining the animal rights movement in urban Mexico. Tell us a little bit about what you're hoping to accomplish by looking at animal rights issues in our border area.
So I'm very interested in animal rights in Mexico, precisely because of the way in which human rights and animal rights are always ranked, and human rights are always sort of ranked over animal rights. But like you were saying, they're connected in different ways. So right now I'm working with an NGO, an organization in Ciudad Juarez called Eco Canis de Asís, who are mainly concerned in trying to look at the ways in which the animal welfare law that's been recently approved in the state of Chihuahua is being applied. And I think by looking at animals and a law that was recently approved or recently passed, it's interesting to think also about animal rights within a legal framework. So not only what the law says, but also the attitudes of different people towards the application of the law. And this particular organization, they're very interested in trying to criminalize animal abuse. So one of their main objectives is to be able to prosecute animal abusers, to sort of send this message that every crime deserves a punishment, and that this also applies to animals. And I think this is interesting in the particular case of Mexico and Ciudad Juarez, because there's a constant challenge in Mexico to the legal system and whether the system is being applied fairly or evenly. And I think that studying how the law applies to non-human animals is also a way to study the state and the law.
Yeah, absolutely. Like in the United States, most standard agricultural farming practices are exempt from animal cruelty laws. Yeah. So if the industry says, hey, we can cut off a pig's tail with no anesthesia, you know, that becomes a standard industry practice, which is shapes how the laws are applied and how they're, you know, so I could see that being very similar in Mexico. Have they had any particular cases where they've worked to try and pursue justice now in light of these changes in the law in Mexico?
Yeah, they have a couple of cases that have received not a lot of press, but that have appeared in local media. One particular case that took place not too long ago was the case of a female pit bull named Justicia or Justice that was shot by a state police officer, and the Justicia didn't die. It actually survived, and this particular police officer went to court. And although some things got in the way, but he was found guilty and he had to pay a specific amount of money as a fine, which still the organization wasn't entirely happy about, but at least they saw that as progress.
Sure.
Well, I really didn't expect to read about how a police officer in Juarez was brought up on charges for killing an animal. That seems contrary to everything that's gone on there for a long time.
Right. Yeah, there's and maybe, you know, it's a lot of what your research is going to be focused on too is how the interplay of violence and how violence is so prevalent and how still people get involved in an animal rights movement when there's so much violence to humans. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about what, for those people that don't spend a lot of time in the border, what Ciudad Juarez is like now in terms of the violence that it's undergone for many years.
Yeah. So right now I would say that, the violence has not gone away. And this first few weeks of 2018, violence has been on the rise a little bit more than the last few years. But Ciudad Juarez was known as the most violent city in the world for a period of about 4 years, I think. And it's interesting that during those 4 years, also the population of street dogs went on the rise, precisely because a lot of people were leaving Juarez because of the violence or maybe didn't want to take the responsibility of having pets. So that's another way in which I think human violence and non-human violence are connected, that you can see that empirically on the streets. Right now, I think the violence is a little bit less dispersed as it used to be in 2008, between 2008 and 2012. So it's not as bad as it was. And what's interesting in my research is in this particular organization that I've been working with is the way in which they try to link these different forms of violence together, right? So it's not only that human violence is only directed towards humans, but that it also is directed towards non-human animals. And the way in which they see this is that by sort of trying to think or correct people who harm animals, they're also in a way preventing human-on-human violence, which I think it's an interesting approach to the animal rights.
You know, one thing I kind of tend to believe is that once you get involved in a social justice issue, the other social justice issues tend to come into play as well. And so I'm wondering if the people who fought against violence towards women and murder of women in Juarez, if that somehow precipitated the animal rights movement in some way. Do you think it furthered that along?
I mean, that's one of the questions that I'm looking at, because in my research, and I'm at an early stage of my research, but I want to compare the way in which victims of femicides are given voice through activist organizations and the way in which animals are given a voice through animal rights activist organizations. So I think there's some parallelisms there. I don't know how much overlap there is between the activists themselves, but I think that definitely this idea that that activism in Ciudad Juarez has to create a voice to speak for those who don't have a voice. I think that's something that you can see in both the cases of women who have been victims of femicide and of animals who have been victims of abuse.
Right. And I almost wonder, to some degree, like now in the United States, there's definitely, as difficult of a political climate it is right now, we're seeing all these marches. We're seeing a lot more women running for office. And so you wonder at sometimes, at the most difficult times of the great mass conflict or people feeling like their rights aren't being protected, that it almost inspires people to actually start moving. Whereas if, you know, your standard status quo is okay, but once you start to see some of the injustices going on, you might be inspired to finally start taking action in one form or another. And elections around the country with more women running for office. So you know, and I think that could only have beneficial consequences for society to have a more equal leadership in the political level. But so based on your, you know, your research so far, how would you, I mean, how are you feeling about the animal rights movement in Juarez? Or how would you say that it's growing or developing, or is it, do you feel like it's getting stronger?
I definitely feel that it's getting stronger. I think a lot of people are involved in rescuing animals. I think there is in Juarez, at least, and I think perhaps in all of Mexico, a way in which people think that somehow veganism is not necessarily connected to animal rights, but something that's different, right? So there's this idea that you can rescue animals, but not rescue animals, and by animals I mean mostly dogs and cats. So sort of leaving out other animals that we don't recognize as necessarily as companions in this urban setting. So it is growing, but the way in which it's growing is very specific, very very targeted to cats and dogs.
People get a chance to establish a bond with an animal where, you know, and then they see them in a whole different light before that they never realize they have the capacity to feel and think and, you know, have all these complex emotions and different personalities and all that sort of thing. So, well, that's promising. I think this is a common thing that a lot of people who are interested in animal protection, they hear is, you know, but I'd love to help with that, but I care more about, we need to get justice for humans first, or we need to get, you know, we need to take care of certain issues that affect humans only. How is your, you know, I don't know if you've had to respond to that, or how do you think people should respond when they're presented with that dilemma?
Yeah, I mean, as an anthropologist working on the border, I definitely get that question a lot. And when I tell people that animal rights activists in Ciudad Juarez are trying to prosecute humans who have abused non-human animals, a lot of people, first response is, well, if they don't prosecute humans who have tortured other humans, why would they do this? And I think, and this actually came from an activist in that organization that I'm working with, because she told me that she thought that the logic of this thinking is reverse, that rather we should think, how is it that you're not prosecuting a human who abused an innocent animal who has no intention of harming others? If we're not able to prosecute a human who has harmed an innocent being, then how can we expect to prosecute a human who has harm on another human, where things get a little bit fussy in
sure,
that sense.
Sure, sure. Yeah, that's an interesting thought.
You know, in the United States, the vegan community is composed of about two-thirds women and one-third men. Is this true in Juarez, or is it even more women?
I mean, I would say it's true, and most of the people I've met who are involved in the animal rights activists are women. Not all of them, but most of them. So I think that demographic proportion is going to be the same.
So what do you think, or what's next for your research and what you hope to accomplish and look at?
Well, in the future, and funding permitting, I would like to expand my research to not only to compare Ciudad Juarez with El Paso, Texas, which are sister cities, but are quite different in a lot of ways. But also, I would like to look at Mexico City, which is often seen as the most progressive city in Mexico, and in terms of animal rights, it has passed the most important legislations in Mexico City. So I'm interested in sort of understanding the way in which Mexicans in Mexico City and people from Ciudad Juárez see animal rights differently, especially thinking that Mexico City used to be a very violent city not too long ago, but that now it's considered a pretty safe city in relation to other cities in Mexico. So I'm interested in understanding this trajectory of animal rights in Mexico and throughout Latin America, precisely because a lot of scholars who work in Latin America have been have not really looked at the animal rights movement as a social movement. So I think that thinking about animal rights movement in Latin America as a social movement would also allow us to see the ways in which it is impacting not only the lives of non-human animals, but also larger questions about justice and gender and inequality.
Right, and hopefully some of the research will be beneficial in a way that examining in a way to replicate some of the success that you've seen in Mexico City and other parts of Mexico and South America. So we're grateful for you for joining us. Our guest has been Dr. Iván Sandoval Cervantes. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks.
Thank you. The Vegetarian Society of El Paso will have its winter dinner on Saturday, February 3rd at the Radisson Airport Hotel, which will feature a vegan buffet and a talk by me called Advertising, Propaganda, and Lies. Deadline for registration for this dinner is Tuesday, January 30th. You can make reservations and pay online if you wish by visiting the Vegetarian Society of El Paso website at vsep.org. There you can register and pay online if you wish, or if you'd rather, you can call 877-3030.
And if you'd like to listen to some of the past shows of ACK Radio, you can find them at ktep.org. Just click on the listen button. Until next time, I'm Tom Linney.
And I'm Greg Lawson.
For the animals, the earth, and a healthier humanity, thanks for listening to Animal Concerns of Texas.